Hello, my name is Delmer Eldred, and I want to welcome you to an interview with Washington State Senator Perry Dozier, representing the 16th District. He lives in Waitsburg, Washington, also serves as Deputy Republican Whip. Senator, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Dale. I'm happy to have this opportunity to speak with you.
And Senator, what is Climate Commitment Act, or more common term, the Cap and Trade Act? What is that?
Well, basically, the Climate Commitment Act is just a name that they put on the legislation. That happens a lot with legislation to kind of make it sound like it's a great bill that's being passed. So if you've heard of cap and trade, that's basically what this is. That's the policy behind the name. It's what this law is supposed to do. It's about reducing carbon emissions. Now, the people on the other side of our political aisle in our state wanted cap and trade for many, many, many years, going all the way back to the previous governor. And they finally got it through in the 2021 legislative session. So you need to remember about that 2021 legislative session. The public was shut off totally from entirely being on campus. There were fences around the entire campus, and we had no people there. It was all done basically remote. The Senate was able to be in the Capitol building with 7 Republican senators and 8 Democrat senators, but very limited staff at the same time. So that bill was actually passed in 2021, and I think that's why it didn't catch the people's attention until now. So the way this law works is the state sells carbon allowances, and they function like permits to emit a certain amount of carbon, and that's the cap part of it. So the amount that businesses within the state, there's a cap, and then if you exceed the cap, then you have to buy the allowance, which is good for emitting 1 metric ton of carbon. And once they're bought from the state, they can be sold to others. That's the trade portion of cap and trade.
Well, this is, it's kind of convoluted because they can buy, sell, trade, or give them away. And the price increase on these are, where do they come up with this? I mean, I think California right now is $29 and something for each credit, and we're, what, 63, 64?
The last one was over $63. You're correct. So if you look at it as a competitive market, you know, it's like going to a farm auction. Let me put it that way. We go to a farm auction, and we're bidding on a piece of equipment, a tractor. And so all of us are out there. There's maybe a dozen of us that need a tractor. We got to have a tractor to get our work done. So we're going to bid each other up until it satisfies the need that I could say that, okay, I bought my tractor and now it's going to allow me to continue to operate more effectively here. So you've got to look at it that. And so the thing that's different in this is this market is open to everybody to purchase, whether they're a business or a investment firm.
Well, when you take all the window dressing off, like where they've changed the name to make it a little more palatable, but there is so much inconsistency in this legislation that it's confusing, you know, and they made it just as difficult as they can. And I think they did that on purpose.
Well, once this was enacted, which it was in January, is when the bill became fully in effect. And I think what has happened since that time is it's like other bills I've seen before. They're flawed when they come out, and then we have to try to fix them at some point. This one has a lot of flaws, and that was never, in my opinion, in looking at it, expected, especially when it's something totally new. California is the only other state that has this.
And but they, the amount of money that they've made, they, I don't even think they realized how much money that the state was going to, their revenues were going to increase with this thing. And it just, I mean, every auction, it's going to get more and more money going into the revenue for the state government, right?
Yes, that is correct. I think I cannot remember the exact figure, Dale, what it was, what the prediction was, what they would bring in. I know it was well less than $1 billion, and we're already $1.5 billion with another auction to go here in, I think it's November.
Well, you know, the thing that you have been stressing upon the legislature is part of their own legislation that they won't live up to, which is really devastating the agricultural industry, the lumber, all the marine industry, everyone that should be getting an exemption on this surcharge, and yet they completely ignore any attempt to bring in line what they agreed on.
That's absolutely correct. Basically, maritime, the timber industry, agriculture was supposed to be exempt from the increase in the costs of our fuels. I mean, it was written that way. And I had proposed legislation also with Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District. We had proposed legislation to take care of that at the end of session. And unfortunately, it was never heard in committee. And so that's a huge issue there, because that cost has been passed on directly to us in the ag and maritime and timber industry, and which affects, obviously, the products that we raise and the cost. Actually, this is a pass-on cost. You could think about it, that goes trickles all the way down to us as individual people in the state.
Well, you know, I mean, you have wrote letters to the director of the ecology, Laura Watson, and you have tried everything, you know, reasonable to get them to be a little more transparency on their post that they put, so we can see actually what is going on, who's where these credits are being sold, and you know, what the emissions fines are and stuff. But there is no transparency, and I think that is no accident. That's by design, right?
I believe so. You know, originally in the bill, you probably saw the letter, I would assume, Dale, that I had sent to Director Watson with Department of Ecology, and citing that even on the Senate floor, an amendment was brought up by one of our Republican senators that would demand the that there is transparency in this program. And it was supported by the prime sponsor of the bill, who is a Democrat from downtown Seattle, who supported the amendment for transparency. And that's kind of what drove this forward with me on the letter to Director Watson, is that when they sent out who had purchased credits, and all I got was a spreadsheet that showed bidder numbers and the amount of credits purchased. So there was no transparency there. Then after the director received the letter, I received on her response, then I was able to go to another site and pull it up. And I could see after the third quarter purchasing of credits, all of the participants in there by name, but whether or not they bought credits or not. Now, when you track down through there, some of these are, you know, businesses that are legitimate businesses that definitely have to buy credits. And I want to make one thing very clear. I'm not going after the businesses that are buying the credits. Because like I say, we're only the second state in the nation to do this. And are we trying to drive businesses out of our state by making it so expensive for them to be here? what I'm trying to look into in this, did we create an auction market where there are outside investors that are buying the credits, driving up the prices, only to turn around and resell those at a later time? And I would like to know how many of the purchasers are legitimate Washington businesses that need to purchase them, and how many of them are investing groups that are not associated with business here that intend on reselling. That's the trade part of it. So, and is that driving up the cost of these, which is driving up the cost that is trickled down to all of us as residents in Washington State here?
Well, that's very interesting, Senator. And if I'm taking this wrong or not, but this actually, the way this is, legislation is set up, it is capable of being having fraud placed into it with just of what you brought up, right?
Well, I don't think I could go that far to say fraud. I mean, it is a business. I mean, it is a cap and trade, and that's what it's set up to do, is be able to buy credits. I mean, if I overpurchased too many credits as a business here in Washington State that I needed, can I sell some of my credits to another business in the state that wasn't able to purchase enough so they can continue to operate? Is, you know, so I don't know where I can't really say it's fraud, but what I say is it's a mechanism that needs much more transparency for myself to grasp what is going on here and why we're so high with our credits.
Well, you know, and Senator, you've been relentless on trying to get this surcharge, the exemptions for the farmers. And, you know, some of these farmers, they're not making any profit at all because of the cost that's going back to them. And, decrease in manufacturing that we're seeing in this state and everything. Right now, agriculture is the lifeblood of this state. And, you know, you can't get the legislature to realize that this is what they have. They need some help. They can't afford to keep doing this for very long.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I see here with the majority party in the Senate is that they basically are up and down the I-5 corridor, we could say, from Bellingham to Olympia. And so they don't realize, I think, as much as a lot of us do, the importance of agriculture to this state. Maybe they don't look at the billions of dollars that comes into this state because of agriculture. And those are some very, very important numbers to look at, because if you keep choking agriculture and you keep choking down the amount of dollars coming in from it, who's going to supply, the food to feed a hungry world? Because we export so much out of the state of Washington. It is a major driver in the economy of this state.
Yeah, and you know, it's just like you said earlier that all of us are affected by this because of the trickle down effect that comes, you know, to the grocery stores. Just about everything we buy has been corrupted by this cap and trade negotiations on credits. And let's just say, I don't know, Exxon, or who's the one that decides how much emissions that they are responsible for? I mean, do they do their own assessment?
Or? No, this is a really, really good question. And it's one that we are still trying to get down to the nuts and bolts of. This is, what is the cap on emissions? And when did you establish those businesses? They're basically their baseline. Was it established, 8 years ago? Was it established just recently? So we know what that baseline is. And so some of it is the fact that I think over the course of time, there has been investments that a lot of these businesses have put in to reduction of carbon emissions on their own. They basically have reinvested to be able to bring it down. And I know that for a fact that there are businesses that have done that. And so where is the baseline? Where do we need to get to? And if you're emitting more and you're having to buy those credits, how can you reinvest in when you're buying credits at such a high rate compared to, like you said, California? And we're 2.5 times more than California. Well, how can you reinvest back in to try to lower those carbon emissions? Or do you eventually just say it's too costly for me to do business in the state of Washington and you leave? And just think what that's going to do to our economy.
Well, I think it already has had quite a bit of effect. I mean, you know, you just look at the border counties in Idaho and Oregon. They are reaping the benefits of this cap and trade legislation because their economy, as far as, you know, the fuel sales and once people are over there, of course, they buy other products. But this has drove a lot of economy right out of the state.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. You could cross the into Oregon from where I live here. And I live in Waitsburg, which is 20 miles north of Walla Walla, but Walla Walla is only 10 miles from the Oregon border. You can cross over into Oregon and you'll save over $1 a gallon on fuel.
And that, you know, that's a big thing. I mean, our gas tax that even before all this came on was what basically maintained our roads and our highways and when they start losing it, then we are going to have less and less money for maintenance on these roads and stuff. And that it all folds into the cap and trade because, you know, I think like you have stated in one of the news things I read that, you know, there wasn't a lot of input into this legislation except for just a few people that wanted it. And they, redesignated the name to make it sound better, but we are painted in a corner right now with this thing. And like I was mentioned earlier, these auctions, the price is just going to keep going up and up.
Yeah, I know, and that's one of the things that I intend on pushing forward. We're only 2.5 months away from the legislative session, and I will continue to push for this transparency. What you brought up is really one of the things. You know, we brought in $1.5 billion. The gas tax, which is 49.5 cents per gallon, state gas tax is what goes to help fund our roads, which were not meeting that those needs. And so as you bring that down, we have less revenue available. Now, this money that the state's bringing in is not earmarked for going to road preservation. And so when you start bringing in, you know, nearly $2 billion, where's it going to go and what's it going to do? And it kind of falls into the way the law is in how we're going to use the revenue. Well, there's a lot of references in the cap and trade law to another law that was passed in 21, which is called environmental justice. So part of knowing who's affected by cap and trade is to follow the money generated by selling this so-called new commodity. So it'll be interesting to see where these dollars go. And again, like I said, it's just unbelievable that the two states that have cap and trade are the two with the highest costs of fuel. And if you look back when this was coming into effect, the governor, when the law was being passed, the governor said, oh, it's only going to add pennies and maybe even lower the gas price. Now, did he really think that, or was it kind of a ploy to make people think that the Climate Commitment Act was this great thing? So
Well, I'm probably going to misquote you, but it was very interesting, a comment that you had on one of your news deals that there's something wrong when we have to produce legislation to get the executive branch of government, state government, to follow the law. So.
Yeah, you know, you are really close to, yes, what I had said, but that is very, very true. So it is kind of like we have legislation that tells a department that falls under the executive branch, meaning the governor, not under the legislative branch. And this department isn't following the law the way it was intended to be and written. So do we have to pass another law to force the department to follow the law that we already passed? That's absolutely my comment was headed towards.
Right. And this is, if we changed Olympia, which I doubt we're going to get that much of it done, but could this legislation be repealed?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. I couldn't answer that with any amount of certainty to know what the process would be on the legislation. I don't know. I know that going into we're going to have a lot of discussion about this going into this next legislative session, Dale. But also, what we need to remember that this is our short session, a 60-day session, and it is going to be very difficult, I think, to really get a lot of this legislation or a lot of this law fixed in this short legislative session. I know that we will try definitely to do it. And I know there's a lot of bills being brought forward to address the inadequacies of this Climate Commitment Act.
Well, you know, I just really want to thank you because you have really stayed on the Democrats, basically, about living up to what they agreed to do. And it's so very important. I mean, this fuel surcharge exemption is something that has to, I don't know how, but it has to be pushed through. They have to do this because, like I said, I don't think these farmers and ranchers can stand the price that they're having to pay and keep operating for very much longer. There's going to be a lot of them that are going to have to, I mean, if you ain't making any money, there's no use doing it, you know?
No, it's very true. And what happens is, you know, Dale, and this is we end up seeing the smaller size farms that don't have the economies of scale, the ones that suffer the most. And with this, because of just the high cost of doing business anymore. I mean, we see it passed on, like I say, not just in the fuel that we put in our tractors and our trucks, but also from the products that we have to buy, our inputs, which then increases the cost of those too. And that's what concerns me the most is that it's going to have a dramatic effect on our agricultural industry and many of those that, you know, are on the verge of that break-even part and where we're going. There has to be some relief. There has to be some relief. And I know that I will reintroduce my bill again this next legislative session. And also there's some others that I'm going to introduce that deal with agriculture. So I'm looking forward to trying to get something done here in January.